This is Edith Millman interviewing Mr. Daniel Goldsmith. Today is February 6, 1995. Mr. Goldsmith, could you tell me when and where you were born and a little bit about your childhood and about your family?
Okay, I was born in Antwerp on December 11th, 1931, to my parents who were originally from Poland. My father was Chaim Goldschmidt. He was from Rimanów, Poland. And my mother was Ruchel Goldschmidt. Originally, her maiden name was Münzer. And she was from Przemyślany, Poland. They both met in Antwerp and got married, and that's where they lived.
Could you tell me when they migrated to Antwerp?
My mother migrated to Antwerp in 1930. My father migrated to Antwerp in 1928. My father had his own business. My father was a plumber, and he had his own business. We lived all the years that of my childhood. We lived on one street in three different houses, but on the same street, which was the Korte Kiewitzstraat in Antwerp. That was in the Jewish section of Antwerp.
Was your father and mother religious?
Yes, my father and my mother were both Orthodox, modern Orthodox. My father didn't have a beard, but he was Shomer Shabbos, and my parents kept a kosher home, as well as they sent me to a yeshiva, because I went to a yeshiva by the name of Tach Kamoni, which I believe is still in existence today.
Was this in addition to your regular school?
No. No, I had both my secular and my religious education at the same school. It was an all-day yeshiva.
Do you know if your parents had to pay for you to go to the yeshiva?
Yes, they had. My parents, I would say, basically were middle-class people, so they had to pay for that, yes.
Did you have any siblings?
Yes. In December 1939, my sister was born. Actually, in between my sister and I, my mother had a miscarriage, but my sister was born at that particular time, so when the war started, it had already started, you know, when she was born, because we look at the war having started in September 1939.
Tell me, did your parents have contact with their family, if any, in Poland?
Yes. As a matter of fact, when I was small, my mother made a trip back to Poland to visit both my father's family and her own family. And I, as a matter of fact, I have some pictures, you know, that show me being in Poland. And they were constantly in touch with them.
Mm-hmm. Were any other members of your parents in Antwerp?
No. My mother and my father were alone in Antwerp. My father's family, most of my father's family was here in the United States. He had one sister. My father was one of nine children. So my father, one of his sisters, and his younger brother were the only ones that were left. And his younger brother had just also gone to the United States. So there were just my father and his sister that were left. Mm-hmm. His sister was left in Poland.
Okay. Could you tell me a little bit about anti-Semitism in Belgium, if any? as you were growing up?
I have to say that having gone to a yeshiva and having lived in a Jewish area, okay, for the in my younger years, remember, I was only 9 years old, you know, when my father got taken away, or actually 8 years old when the war started, I encountered very little anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. Even though the street that we lived on was a half Jewish and a half non-Jewish, the people were basically nice to us, so that I did not have any problems. And of course, all my friends were, most of my friends, I should say, you know, were Jewish. So I didn't encounter as a
so
little boy.
You didn't have much contact with non-Jewish people.
Right.
How about your parents? Do you think that they had much contact with non-Jews?
Yes, they did. They, my father, being a plumber, okay, did work in a lot of the non-Jewish houses. My mother was very friendly with the non-Jewish people, you know, on in our street. So they did have quite a bit of contact with them.
Okay. Do you happen to know if your parents were Zionists?
Yes. My parents were very strong Zionists. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, that's why, I got my feeling for Zionism, you know, from them.
From you.
Yes.
Were there any Zionist organization that would take children as young as you, you know, to group meetings or so?
No, I was actually, we talked about that, you know, but I really was too young, you know, to go to attend any of those meetings.
Okay. What was the language of instruction in the yeshiva?
The language of instruction in yeshiva was Flemish for the secular course and Yiddish for the Jewish instructions.
So there was secular instruction,
yes,
at the same time?
At the same time, yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, we learned Hebrew in yeshiva.
Yeah. How, do you know how old you were when you started school?
Six.
What are your earliest memories of the war?
The earliest memories of the war actually were the discussions that my father and mother had, because living in Antwerp, Antwerp at that particular time was a very big port of exit, and many, many people that my mother and my father knew from home, meaning from Poland, came through Antwerp to leave basically for the United States.
Do you know if your father tried to get an exit visa?
Yes, yes. My father, as a matter of fact, tried very, very hard, you know, to get his family that was over here, you know, to send him an exit visa. And the family did apparently did not take it as serious as my father took it, okay? Because they said, you know, why do you want to come over here? You know, you have a successful business over there. Of course, you know, in retrospect, you know, you can also say that nobody knew what was going to happen, of course, you know. It was just another war, so to speak, at that particular time. Although my parents sensed that there was much more than that because of the stories, you know, that people would tell, you know, coming through, of what was happening in Germany and what was happening in Poland.
Okay. What happened when the Germans invaded Belgium?
When the Germans invaded Belgium, we fled. Like most of the Belgians actually did, we fled south. We went towards Ostend, you know, which is the seashore, you know, of Belgium, and then south towards France. But the war in Belgium lasted a very short time. It was only 2 weeks, and so we were in Calais, which is in France, near the Belgian border, when the Germans caught up with us. And when that happened, there was nothing else that we could do except go back to Antwerp. An ironic part of the whole thing is that it was at that particular time, just before the Germans invaded Belgium, that finally my father received the papers to go to the United States. By that time it was too late already, because the last ship had left and he couldn't leave anymore.
So he did get the papers.
Eventually.
Eventually.
It was too late.
When you came back to Amsterdam, did you go back to Antwerp? I'm sorry. Did you go back to your own apartment, to your own house?
Yes, we went back to the house because that was like in 1940. And actually, life basically went back to normal when we got back. Meaning my father went back to work and I went back to school and everything was okay, you know, for a few months. Mm-hmm. And then after that, little by little, the sanctions started. You know, we had
sanctions against the
Against the Jews. In other words, we had curfews.
The curfew was different for you than from for the Belgians, or was
there
no?
It was only for the Jews.
There was no curfew
for the Belgians. Okay. Yes, it was only for the Jews. Then they started closing down the schools. Teachers couldn't teach, doctors, you know, couldn't practice anymore, my father couldn't do any work anymore, we had to wear the yellow star.
You had the yellow star, right?
Yes.
It was on the chest?
It was on the chest, on the jacket,
on
yes.
On the jacket.
We had, had to wear the yellow star, we couldn't go to the theater anymore, you know, all the civil rights were taken away, you know, little by little. And this went on until August 1942, when my father received a notice to report to the train station for, to go to a labor camp.
Was this the first time that you or your parents heard about labor camps or about people being taken to labor camps?
This was not the first time, in other words, that my parents had heard of me, that there were labor camps, but this was the first time, I mean, that, you know, he heard, you know, that they were going to take Jews away, you know, to labor camps in northern France.
In northern France?
Yes. In other words, he knew he was going to France.
Oh, he knew that he was going to, he had to go to France.
To France. My father and my mother...
Were there any people, Jewish people, shipped out from Antwerp at that time? Young people?
Oh, yes. They had thousands of them that were shipped out. There were, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of transports.
That were going where?
That were going to, supposedly, to France.
Were these mostly young people? Were they men and women, or just, do you know?
Men.
On men.
Men. Mm-hmm. I don't know about how young they were, but they were men.
Men.
My mother and my father had discussed, you know, because at that particular time, you know, a lot of people were starting to think about hiding, leaving the country by any which way, you know, and my father, my mother talked about saying, well, he was in very good health. My father was, I'm trying to remember, he was like 40 years old, 42 years old, was in good health. He said, you know, the war has already been on for over 2 years, you know. He says, how much longer can it last, you know? He says, I think I'll go, you know, and I'll be back shortly. It's not going to last very long. That, I have to say that at that particular time, We had not heard about concentration camps.
That was in 1942.
We had not heard about concentration camps. We had heard about labor camps, but not the concentration camps. That's the reason, you know, why my father actually decided to go. We went to the train station.
Do you remember what month it was?
August.
It was in August.
August 1942. Mm-hmm. September 1942.
Okay. I think.
We went to the train station. The This is the time that I really remember quite vividly.
We have to interrupt for a while. Mr. Goldsmith is overcome by emotion.
We went to this train station, my mother, my father, and my little sister and I. The train station in Antwerp is a huge, I mean huge, train station. A cover train station. And there were thousands and thousands of people, same as us, you know, saying goodbye. And my father said to me, he says, "You're now the man in the house. Anyway," he said, "you're the man of the house now." And he says, "you'll have to take care of your mother and your sister until I come back." And I told him I would. And that was the last time I saw my father. We heard from him a little bit later on. We received a postcard which said that he was in France near Boulogne and that he was okay.
And that's all it said?
That's all it said. I'll show you the card. And we went back to the house. We tried to live a normal life as possible, which was difficult because you gotta remember, my sister was a year and a half old. And we were not used to all these restrictions, you know, which had been imposed.
How about financially, since your father couldn't work much the previous year? Were you okay financially at that time?
Well, my mother was strapped financially, you know, but we did have some money. And what she wound up doing is, as she needed some money, she would sell some of my father's tools, things like that. Things that were precious. She had some sort of a foresight. I don't know. It's like a sixth sense. She figured, you know, things were going to go wrong. And so she went across the street. We had this non-Jewish family that lived that had a grocery store. And she gave him our pictures, and she asked him to hold on to our pictures. And she went to a couple of other neighbors and gave him our silverware to hold on to that, and gave to some other neighbors dishes, and to some other neighbors some of my father's tools, so that they would be safe. Not everybody would have everything at the same time. And when my father would come back, you know, it would be enough, you know, that we could start all over again.
Could you tell me if at that time the Germans would come into Jewish homes and rob the houses?
Well, they did more than that, because very shortly after my father left, there was a raid on our street. Now, we lived in Korte Kivitzstadt, was a
How do you spell it, or how could
Korte Kivitzstadt,
it's Korte Kivitz?
Korte, which is, means little bird, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's a kivit bird. Korte, or short, is uh-huh. actually K-O-R-T-E, and okay. Kivit, K-I-E-V-I-T.
Okay.
Start a, a street. Was actually row homes.
Mm-hmm.
They were all attached, you know, two okay. stories high. And what happened very shortly after that was in the middle of the night, we heard commotion. Our house was number 34, which was not at the end of the street. It was like towards somewhere in the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
So the Germans had blocked off both ends of the street. And where we heard a commotion was the yelling and the screaming that was going on, you know, when they came in, they just took people right out of their beds.
Mm-hmm. But you said it was a little mixed neighborhood. Did
yes.
they take the Belgians too, or just
no.
the Jews?
No, they didn't, because that's when the true colors showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Several of the non-Jews showed the Germans where the Jews lived,
mm-hmm.
and where the non-Jews lived, and they helped them. With that, I don't know, my mother was a woman, you know, that had a good head and was also very heroic. She quickly took my sister and I and took us upstairs. We lived on it's like steps going up, and we lived on the first floor. There was a second floor above us where there was a skylight, you know, that you could push
mm-hmm.
up.
Mm-hmm.
She got a ladder, and we climbed up onto the roof, you know, through the skylight. She got rid of it, you know, she pushed the ladder away. And we went and we hid. The roof was slightly tilted, and the front had a stone wall,
mm-hmm.
and we hid
behind
the wall, the stone
mm-hmm.
wall. It was very difficult, of course, because my sister was a little baby, you know, and you know, my mother was saying, oh, shh, be quiet, you don't make any noises or anything like that. In the meanwhile, we could see and we could hear all the yelling and screaming that was going on of all the people that were being dragged out of the houses, and we saw some of them being beaten up. And we could finally hear, you know, where they came to our house. Of course, they rang the bell, you know, nothing happened over there. They bashed in the doors, you know, and they came running through the house. And they didn't see any, of course we weren't there. They did go upstairs, but when the skylight opened up, you know, we were here. The pitch was this way, the skylight opened up this way, and they just looked around and they didn't see anything,
mm-hmm.
fortunately
so
for us.
They didn't take the ladder to go up there or anything like
they
that?
They did take the ladder.
They did take the ladder.
But they didn't go onto the roof, they
uh-huh.
just poked their heads through
uh-huh.
and shone their flashlights,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't see us.
Mm-hmm. So that was at night, you said?
At night, yeah, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. So they left. And as soon as my mother made sure, you know, that it was safe to get back into the house, you know, we went back inside, and it was an absolute mess. They ransacked the whole house. There was no furniture that was left, you know, that wasn't broken or anything like that. I mean, it was a real mess. Because we heard the whole commotion, you know, but we just didn't know what was happening. And we couldn't get out because they had barricaded the door. You know, they had nailed the whole front shut.
Of the building,
the door, the mm-hmm. door of the house was mm-hmm. nailed shut because they had smashed the door in. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So they nailed it shut. Now we lived behind the railroad tracks. Remember I mentioned to you it's a very, very, at that point we did not live too far from the train station. So at that point, you know, you have all the different tracks, you know, that are coming. So it's a very wide area. And our house was behind the railroad tracks, and we had the house and a little backyard where we had the outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have any indoor plumbing at that particular time. Although we did have water, but we didn't have the bathroom. So we used to take, in the olden days, my mother had this big, I don't know, call it the pan, a big pan of the vat, whatever it is, and she used to boil the water, you know. And
that's how.
We would sit in it, you know, and that's how we would get our baths. But anyway, when everything was quiet, you know, she told us not to make any sounds, you know, and not to do anything, and my mother left at night. And my mother had already at that particular time...
What, did she get out through the window? Or
she went out to the backyard. The backyard, which was not, you know, the front was...
It was shut.
Shut, you know, but the back was not. She was able, I don't know how in the world she managed to climb up, you know, onto the railroad tracks. But she did that, and she was able to contact the underground. My mother had made, already had started, had enough sense to make contact with the Belgian underground.
Were these Gentile Belgians, or were they Jews?
Some of them were Jewish.
Some
of them were Jewish. That's how she made contact with them. And what she was able to do was able to make arrangements to place my sister and I in a convent. That was the first place. While she, you know, the convent was away, you know, from Antwerp, and it would be a safe place. So that's where we went.
Who brought you to the convent?
My mother did. Yeah. My mother did, and the, like I said, the underground people helped her, because they were the ones that brought the car.
You went by car.
Went by car. And all this was done at night.
Was that many days after that action that they had in when they cut out the people? Was it several days later?
Yeah, several days later.
So up to that time you stayed in the apartment?
In the house.
In the house.
And we ate whatever food, you know, was left, you know, I mean, that they didn't break or anything, because they just left a mess. I'm talking about, you know, everything was splattered on the floor, you know, everything was broken.
Do you happen to know how many people were taken that day, approximately?
No.
Were there any Jews left in
Antwerp
after that?
Yes, there were, but they were like sudden raids. They, I think there were several of these raids, you know, that happened one after another.
Do you know where these people were taken?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
But they were all taken, families, I mean, women and children.
There was everybody. Everybody was taken out. Mm-hmm. Everybody was taken out. And what hurt were these non-Jewish people that helped. Now, I have to say this, not everybody did. The people, I was telling you about the grocery store and all that, those people were wonderful people. And they did not help the Germans at all. They were decent people. But there were other people, there was one in particular I remember, he was a policeman, the family that lived there. And they were going around, you know, showing the Germans, you know, where the Jews lived. So, we went to that convent, and we didn't stay there very long. We only stayed there for a couple of months.
Did the people in the convent knew that you were that these were Jewish children?
There were very few people that knew. It was the Mother Superior. The Mother Superior knew, and a few nuns knew.
Were there many children in that convent?
Yes, there were a lot of children.
Mostly, many Jewish children, do you know?
Yes, there were some Jewish children, because what happened was, in December, suddenly my mother shows up and takes us out of there, and as well, and warns...
That was in, excuse me, that was in 1942, right?
December 1942. Okay. December 1942. My mother is, has been told by the underground that the Germans found out that there were Jews being hidden there, and they were going to raid
the convent.
So she warned the Mother Superior. All the Jewish children were taken out of there. Mm-hmm. And so now my mother had the problem, you know, of being responsible for us again, you know, and then doing something. So she hid us, you know, with some Christian people that she knew, but we couldn't stay there for very long.
Tell me, these non-Jewish people that took you in, were they being paid, or did they do it for nothing?
They did it for nothing. The people that my mother did that.
This is tape one, side two, interview with Mr. Daniel Goldsmith, Edith Millman interviewing.
So again, I'll repeat, the people that my mother dealt with, they did it without any pay. They were humanitarian people.
Was there any punishment if they had been caught?
Absolutely. It was death.
Did they threaten with death? Or?
Absolutely, because they part of the edicts, you know, which came out, you know, when all the restrictions were coming. After the raids, okay, the edict came out, you know, that, you know, you cannot deal with a Jew, you cannot hide a Jew, you know, on the punishment of death. Okay. So, through them, my mother decided, through them, meaning the Belgium underground, my mother decided to split my sister and I up. And so what she wound up doing is, replacing my sister with a private Christian family. And myself, she wound up placing me in an orphanage. The orphanage was run by a Father Cornelius, who had several orphanages. He was a very good man, but he also was a Catholic man.
It wasn't a monastery or anything like that.
No, it was an orphanage for boys. Mm-hmm. Orphanage for boys. Where the first orphanage that they took me, you know, which was in Wilder, you know, was actually a very nice place.
You're talking about the convent now? Where was the convent? Where is the?
I don't know where the convent was. That's one thing I don't know.
You don't remember?
I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. And neither did my mother. Otherwise, I would have made a point, you know, to find out. But she just couldn't remember where it was.
Mm-hmm. So then you went to an orphanage.
Then I went to an orphanage, right. And this orphanage, like I said, was in Wilder.
How you spell that?
That's W-E-E-L-D-E,
okay.
Wilder. And like I said, you know, it was run by Father Cornelius. Cornelissen.
Mm-hmm. Cornelissen.
C-O-R-N-E-L-I-S-S-E-N, Cornelissen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very nice place. I'm talking about the place, you know, where you learn farming, you know, where you were out in the open air,
mm-hmm.
where you raised animals, in particular pigs, things like that. You learned quite a bit over there. One thing I have to say is that he also was a Catholic priest, you know, and he tried very hard to convert me.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not convert because I always had with me a siddur. This was the one thing that I always had with me, a siddur. And he was not successful, you know, in converting me. However, he had to make sure, you know, that I was not conspicuous, you know, with the other children.
And?
Okay, because he was the only one that knew that I was Jewish. No one else knew.
Do you know if you were the only Jewish child, or do you think
in that orphanage? I think I was, but there was a second orphanage which I know I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I'll explain that to you later on. The what he did, you know, is he made me go, you know, then to Catholic school, like with the other children,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of made things, you know, a lot easier. But he didn't want, you know, to leave things alone because he wasn't too sure, you know, if I would be found out or what, you know. So he moved me, after a while, he moved me to the other orphanage,
mm-hmm.
which was in Mechelen. That particular orphanage...
He was also in charge, I mean, he had connection with both orphanages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That one... You know, however, I didn't know it at that particular time, but I found out later on that there were more Jewish children there.
Mm-hmm.
And there, not only did I go to Catholic school, but I went to church. I became an altar boy. I learned everything about Catholicism.
What was the name of that orphanage, do you remember? The second orphanage. Or do you know where it was?
And I only know the name of the orphanage was in Mechelen.
Mechelen.
It's spelled M-E-C-H-E-L-E-N.
Okay.
But I don't remember actually the name of
that was an orphanage
in Mechelen. Where, and by the way, what he also did in order to make things a lot more... let's say, right for the outside world, is he created false baptismal papers for me.
Mm-hmm.
This is, again, he was trying to get them legitimately by converting me, but since I didn't, you know, finally did agree, you know, to make a false baptismal and also change my name.
Mm-hmm.
And my name at that, when I was in the orphanage, was Willie Peters, which is a typical Belgian. Willie Peters,
uh-huh.
Typical Belgium name.
Mm-hmm.
In there, like I said, everything, I went to school, and everything, you know, seemed to be basically normal. Now we're talking already about, you know, going from, you know, the first orphanage was in 1943,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Now we're talking about the end of 1943 is when he put me in the other orphanage, and now we're talking about the beginning of 1944.
Mm-hmm. So at that time you were about 13 years old?
No, 12.
12.
12.
12, okay.
12 years old. Because I was born in December.
So
I was 12 mm-hmm. years old. And then everything was coming along okay until one day, suddenly the Germans showed up
mm-hmm.
under the clear blue sky. And what they did is they gathered all the boys. It was a very simple thing for them to do. And they made everybody undress. And everybody that was Jewish was circumcised.
And the Belgian usually don't circumcise,
They're not circumcised. There was one other boy that had a problem because he did have an operation on his penis, but it was not a circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
But they took him anyway, you know, because they weren't sure, you know. But here we were, you know, all the Jewish kids, even though we didn't know by ourselves, you know, that we were Jewish amongst mm-hmm. ourselves. But the Jewish kids were circumcised and nothing helped. The papers didn't help, you know, the name didn't help. All the witnesses didn't help and nothing helped. So they took us to prison. And
how many children were with you, do you remember?
Six.
Six boys.
Six boys. They took us to prison and over there, you know, they tried to, you know, to find out, you know, if we knew more, you know, there was questioning going on. By that time, by the way, it was May.
Of 44?
May of 44. 44.
Mm-hmm.
May 44.
Mm-hmm.
And none of us knew, you know, so they had no use for us anymore. And so what happened was, you know, they put us on a train. And they put, but in the prison, you know, I met other children. I mean, it wasn't just us, you know, there were other children that were there. They put us on a train. And we started going, we didn't know where we were going. But there was this one young boy, you know, who was older than we were, you know, who was a real fighter. And he says, you know, we have to escape from the train. And that's what we did. We escaped from the train. About 20 children, you know, were able to...
Was it a regular train or was it one of the cattle car
things? Yeah, one of those cattle cars.
Cattle car train.
And...
How did you escape? How did you do it?
He did it by, I don't know where he got hold from, he got a hold of a piece of iron.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to, now, the other thing that I want to say, even though this was a train, you know, it was apparently was not as well guarded
mm-hmm.
as you would, some of the other trains were, because, I don't know for what reason, but whatever it was, it wasn't as well guarded, so that he was able to take the metal piece that he had with him and break the piece of wood enough, you know, for us to slide through.
Well, was the train moving? Or
yeah, no? But what he did is he waited, you know, for when the train was slowing down at a curve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that's when he said, you go. So that's how we escaped. Now, once we all got back together again, because we all got, you know,
jumped
at the different places, we all got back together again. And the first thing that we did is, again, two things. It happened at night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And fortunately for us, we were near a group of trees. It was not a forest per se, you know, but certainly a group of trees, you know, where we were able, you know, to get in there and hide. But we didn't know where we were. We didn't know where we were. So we decided, you know, to hide during the day. And at night, you know, to, like, a couple of us, you know, older ones, you know, would go out and try to find out, you know, where we were. And you couldn't talk to anybody, but at least, you know, if you could see a sign, you know, or
mm-hmm.
something like that. You know.
Were you still in Belgium?
Yeah, we were still in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And what we wound up doing, once we found out we were in Belgium, the oldest boy went to church. I mean, it was very, very risky, you know, but he felt, you know, we had no other choice. Went to a church, spoke to the father over there, and we hit it lucky. He took us in, and what he did is he placed every one of us with a Christian family, but nobody knew where anybody was,
mm-hmm.
and the other Christian families didn't know that there were other children, you know, in town
mm-hmm.
being hit. Nobody knew. Nobody
mm-hmm.
knew. Only the priest. And I was placed with this one family, Monsieur and Madame Bautier, and what they did is they hid me in the attic. One of the good things about this, though, was that I couldn't show my face. Of course, you know, I couldn't see or hear anything. Was that they had again, this is one of these little villages, you know, where all the houses are attached. So you have long, deep gardens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They had. So I was able to at least go out at night because there was no light, and to do it very quietly. I spent some time outside at night, but during the day I was up in the attic. People were very, very kind to me. They were older people. They had two daughters. At that particular time, one was 18, I believe, the other one was about 20. And they kept me there until we got liberated. Now remember, I'm in Belgium. Okay, so we got liberated in September 1944. Remember, June
mm-hmm.
is when the invasion started, you know, we
mm-hmm.
got liberated in September 1944. And I even have a couple of pictures I brought with me. They're not very good pictures, but that was the liberation
mm-hmm.
of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, let me regress a little bit, okay? My mother knew where I was. But she also found out that through the underground, of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, she knew the priest, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she knew through the underground, you know, where I was. But she also found out from the underground that I'd been captured.
Mm-hmm.
So she started looking for me because she didn't know where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was looking for me through another priest, a wonderful, wonderful man by the name of Father André.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the city of Namur,
mm-hmm.
which is also in Belgium. Just a side note, Father André was recognized as a righteous Gentile. He was recognized as a righteous Gentile, and his picture is one of the pictures that are on the United States Holocaust Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And of course his picture, I have a picture of him, you know, when he was much younger.
Right.
But now he's passed away since, but he's
so,
much older.
So he must have been in touch with the underground.
Yes, he was, and he
mm-hmm.
saved a lot of Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
He was a wonderful, wonderful person. He was another person, you know. He didn't take any money.
Mm-hmm.
And he helped a lot of Jews after the war also.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my mother was looking for me, and she was in a city in Lamur, and there was an air raid, an Allied air raid.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother got caught in that air raid. And she lost a leg during the air raid. As a matter of fact, she was the only person that survived in that building. But she almost died because she was bleeding, you know, and her leg had been severed from her. And they took her to the hospital. And so when this happened just before the liberation, and after we got liberated, Monsieur and Madame Bautier, you know, they got in touch, you know, with the underground, and they were trying to locate my mother. And they finally found my mother in the hospital. And I went to see her, and I almost didn't recognize her. She aged 20 years. I mean, she was white as a sheet, and her hair was gray, and of course, she was in terrible shape, you know. But eventually, you know, everything worked out okay, and she came out of it.
Tell me, all this time, was she on false papers, or how did she go about, you know, who was hiding her, or you?
She was, all this time, I mean, she was actually working with the Belgium underground. She had false papers also. She was caught, I can't believe this, 4 times, and escaped 4 times. She was just absolutely heroic. And all this, I have to tell you this, all this was because of the light at the end of the tunnel, which basically was the hope, you know, that my father would come back, you know, we would be able, you know, to start a family again, and be a family again. Later on, she told me if she had known my father had been killed, she would never have known this. And I believe her. I believe her. So she moved around. She was never in one place, you know,
mm-hmm.
for very long.
Mm-hmm.
She moved around a lot.
Tell me about, well, first of all, what happened to you later? So you were liberated when? In 1944?
In September 1944. And then very shortly after that, it's a French committee, you know, for, you know, that helps Jewish children, went ahead and started collecting Jewish children from Christian homes,
mm-hmm.
and to try to bring them back together again, to try to reunite them with whatever family there would be later on,
mm-hmm.
okay? And also to try to start a new life. I mean, after all these children, you know, missed several years, you know, of their childhood. So we were first put in a place called Home de là-bas, which again was a chateau.
Was that in France or
no,
in Belgium?
No,
in
this
Belgium,
is always in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
Home de là-bas was in Belgium, which was a chateau. Actually, it was a big chateau because half of the chateau, I'll never forget this, was occupied by us, and the other half was occupied by American troops.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very vividly Thanksgiving 1944, because we had never heard, you know, Thanksgiving. It was the first time we saw white bread, you know, and how you celebrate, how the Americans were celebrating the Thanksgiving. And little by little, you know, they were bringing us together.
But at that time, you knew that your mother was alive. You were in touch with your mother at that time?
Yes. At that time, I knew my mother was alive, and also that my mother couldn't take care of me, you know. But so, you know, because she was in the hospital for a very, very long time. Very long time. It was not only The reason she was in the hospital for a long time was not only because she had lost a tremendous amount of blood, and that's how close she was to death, but she had to regain her strength, and then she wound up literally having a peg leg, because she had a very, very short stump left. You know, she didn't have an awful lot of her leg left. Mm-hmm. She had a very short stump left, and it would have been very difficult, you know, for her, you know, to learn how to walk because of the short stump. So they kept her in the hospital for a long time. Anyway, after they got us, you know, from the home, the Labar, we stayed there for a few months, and they started bringing in other children. Now, these were children now that were starting to come in, you know, from Holland, from Germany, from Czechoslovakia, from Hungary, from Yugoslavia. These children actually, this is what I mean by a displaced persons camp, okay, because it was not the same thing as they had in Germany, but this was strictly for children. Mm-hmm. But these children knew for a fact, you know, they had lost their families. There was no place for them else to go. So once we were a fairly large group, then they transferred us to another place, which is this place, Esh en Rafai.
How do you spell that?
Esh en Rafai. It's three words. It's Esh, A-I-S-C-H, E, en, E-N, Rafai, I believe it's R-E, F-A-I-L.
Okay.
Esh en Rafai. And that was a house, a fairly decent large house, in which they took all of his children, okay? This is the place, actually, it was in the country, it was on top of a hill, had a beautiful view of the surrounding, you know, countryside. And this is the place where we started to learn how to live again. It was run, you know, by a doctor and his wife, and we started.
Were they Belgian or French? Do you know?
No, they were Belgian Jews. Where we learned the basics of life, so to speak, again. They separated us in groups of in different ages, you know. Mm-hmm. We started learning things again. Mm-hmm. At the same token, at the same time, I should say, the Palestinians, Jews, the Haganah, actually sent people over to help us learn Hebrew and to start learning, you know, what is called Hachshara, which means, you know, to work, you know, in the fields, you know, and agriculture and things like that.
So were children being taken out from there through the Aliyah bed, through the illegal Aliyah?
Some of them wound up in the illegal Aliyah, yeah, eventually. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anybody go, okay, but some of them did wind up, because most of these children wound up in Israel. You know, they did. Right. A lot of them wound up in Cyprus until they finally got to Israel. How I know that is really because of the correspondence I used to have with them, you know, after the war. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a lot of the correspondence got lost, but I do have some pictures, so I can show you that. We had the pleasure of seeing the Jewish Brigade. I don't know whether you're aware, but the Jewish Brigade, you know, was the Palestinian, you know, Jewish soldiers, you know, that fought with the British. And they came to see us, and we went to see them. And so we started living again. I'm talking about we started keeping Shabbos again, you know, we started davening, we started learning. We started going places, we started life again, except it was just amongst us none of us had any parents, you know, to go to. Mm-hmm. We didn't know, you mm-hmm. know, what was happening, whether we were going to have any parents, because, believe it or not, for us, this was the most difficult part of the war. Because now you live for hope, okay? And now the end has come, the war end has come, and now you're trying to hope, you know, and making sure you know that so-and-so is coming back and so-and-so mm-hmm. is coming back. Those were very, very, very difficult times. Most of us never saw our parents again, most of us. In my case, of course, I saw my mother, you know, but my father, you know, didn't come back.
Now tell me about your sister. What happened with your sister?
Oh, my sister was with a Christian family, which was very, very good to her. They really raised her. But there's a sad part to the story, and that is it happened many times over and over again. When you give a family a baby, like remember my sister was a year and a half, almost 2 years old, and she spends two and a half years with them, they become very, very attached to her, which is very, very understandable. And so it was 1945. So you're talking about my sister basically spent 3 years with them.
Mm-hmm.
1945, before my mother finally had enough energy and strength, you know, to come out of the hospital. At that point, she is looking to claim her child. And the problem is, you know, these people didn't want to give her up. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy, and, you know, for people who actually, you know, treated her very, very nicely. She became part of their family. But it's also my mother's child, and she wants him back. So it became a battle. Fortunately, unknown to us, my father's younger brother, the one that I talked to you about, that was the last one to leave home, came to Belgium as an American soldier and started looking for us, and he found us. He found us just about the time, you know, when my mother was having a hard time, you know, with these people. And so this is my Uncle Moshe, and he used his influence as an American, and with American authority, you know, and he took my sister away from them.
Mm-hmm.
So here is...
Did your sister have a rough time adjusting to your mother?
Yes and no. Yes, because my mother, in essence, was a stranger to her, you know, at that particular time. But no, is because when they took my sister away from them, you know, they put my sister with me, and that mm-hmm. was in the home that I was in.
Oh, okay.
Okay, which is the home that I was telling you about in Port Fonsard, in Neuchâtel-Vrai, and there. She was with other children, you know, and myself, you know, being able, you know, to tell her, you know, who she is, etc., etc., it made things a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And after my mother got out of the hospital, she still couldn't take care of us because she couldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the process, actually, with the help of Father André, in trying to get an artificial leg.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a hard time with that. So they transferred us from this home to another home, which was the Hachshara of Marquin. It was like a school, again, a very, very large place. This was more religious, was more orthodox, and the same thing, it belonged to Bnei Akiva, but the point was, you know, to teach us a trade, to teach us how to take care of the land, you know, to prepare us, you know, to go to Palestine.